Welcome to the Smart Family Podcast, where we want to help you love being home. Here are your hosts, Dr. Rob Meter and Tony Newhoff.
Hi there, and thank you so much for joining us at the Smart Family Podcast. We've had an episode in the past about screen time and what parents can do to guide their kids. And with everything that's happened over the last year and how much time we're all spending on screens, Rob and I thought this would be a great time to have another conversation. And Dr. Shimmy Kang is an expert who wrote a book called The Tech Solution. She has some excellent advice for us, and it's just so timely. Rob, I would love to hear from you what you're hearing from parents. Have you had any personal experiences with what you've observed and why this seems to be an urgent issue in your mind right now?
Absolutely, Tony. I mean, personally, I mean, I have four kids myself, so I'm right in the thick of it right now. But in my practice, I get asked about technology and screen time definitely on a daily basis, if not multiple times a day. And it is usually a real flashpoint in families. I have heard of, parents of teenagers say their child has become anxious and depressed after, scrolling through social media endlessly. I've heard of parents of nine-year-olds, boys playing video games and then taking the console away and the child sneaking into the bedroom at night to retrieve the console to play in the middle of the night and then wondering why their child is so tired the next day and not doing well at school. I mean, it can become a real, real huge issues in so many family. And unfortunately, COVID, for all the benefits technology has brought us in COVID, virtual schooling and being able to stay connected socially, it has also brought so much time on screens that for many families, it's become very, very tough to manage. So I'm super excited to have Shimmy Kang talk to us about this today. She has done so much research in this area. She is so well versed and has some really practical solutions for us. So I'm happy she's here with us today.
Dr. Shimmy Kang is an award-winning Harvard-trained doctor. She's a researcher. She has studied addictions and she's familiar with the neuroscience behind the mental health impacts of technology. She has spent over 20 years researching and working with patients and families as a clinical psychiatrist. She has a wealth of knowledge for us. And so without any further ado, let's get into our conversation with Dr. Shimmy Kang.
Dr. Shimmy Kang, welcome to the Smart Family Podcast. We are so glad you're able to join us today.
Thank you, Rob. Thank you, Tony, for all your amazing work. I've enjoyed your episodes and have learned a lot. Happy to be here.
Oh, good. Thank you. So we want to talk about technology, and that's a broad topic, but it is such a important topic and one that I think affects every single person listening to the podcast today in one way or another. You know, it's funny because we're in COVID-19 right now, and of course, everybody is. And I can't imagine getting through the pandemic without technology. I mean, it has had many good things. And maybe that's a place where we should start. I mean, what are some good things about technology and how it's helping our kids? And what would you love to promote about technology over the next few years and some trends that you see that, maybe might change things for the better?
Yes. Well, I love that question because we're starting with positivity and optimism, which is great for the brain and great for kids and families. So, in my book, The Tech Solution, I actually opened up and I talked about technology and I called it the fire of our time. And the reason why I picked that analogy is I believe that, we are in a pivotal point in human history where technology, if we harness the power of this innovation in service of our own health, our own happiness, our own fitness, our own mental health, our own innovation, adaptability, as we saw in COVID, and our own success, then technology is our partner and necessary partner for the next step in human evolution, really. No different than early humans when they harnessed the power of fire. They had to decide if they were going to teach this to their children. And you know, those that did teach children how to play with fire and use fire, the early humans, they went further and farther than ever before, explored new territories, and were able to survive and thrive. So those are many powerful aspects of tech, but like fire, you know, it certainly can be dangerous and it can burn you and burn down the village. And so that's why I picked that in analogy, because I truly feel the phone, the laptops, the iPads, these are the fire of our time.
In that sense then, so like when you talk about the fire, because I think that's a great analogy, you know, but I feel like many people think it's been a forest fire out of control that we're, you know, trying to bring and rein in. But have you seen some things in COVID-19 that have been positive in terms of taming the fire?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, if the pandemic didn't show us the power of technology for good, I don't know what more evidence we need. People were able to work from home and children were able to go to school online school. People were able to FaceTime their grandparents, you know, that they'd never seen or were able to see. We know studies indicate that FaceTime and video conferencing release oxytocin, very powerful neurohormone of trust, bonding, and love, a very powerful antidepressant and painkiller, and longevity agent. So, you know, and tech allowed all of that to happen. And in my own family, I have a son who's 15 and he has ADHD and dysgraphia and a written output learning difference. And my daughter has dyslexia. And I've seen technology be a major equalizer for them. My son uses his noise canceling headphones in class and he takes photos because he can't write very fast. So he takes pictures of homework and assignments. And my daughter uses Google Read and Write to help her reading. And without tech, these two children, I think, would have really struggled and have been lost. And, you know, we know there's a lot of research in autism and mental health. And, you know, I can go on and on about the profound positive health benefits, happiness benefits, and success and innovation benefits of technology.
At this time, we have technology burgeoning. It's been a challenge for our society, but it's not the first time society has faced something new in terms of technology. You know, for example, decades ago, television was introduced. But could you comment on how it may be different this time? What do you see as a child psychiatrist?
Yeah, that's such a great question, Tony, because, you know, I do hear that a lot. And people say like, oh, you know, when books came out, you know, people thought books were going to screw up children's minds, and then the TV, and everyone was worried about it. And I do totally understand that. And we don't want to panic, and we don't want to create anxiety where there doesn't need to be. However, when we look at books and we look at the television, for example, let's take the TV, and I talk about this in the tech solution. It took roughly 30 years for the television to hit 50% of American households. That's the stat. Mm-hmm. So that's called a household saturation point. And it took 30 years. And in those 30 years, families adapted and figured it out and still had dinner together, but watched TV. And there was one or two channels. And, you know, it did disrupt human behavior, like the family dinner, let's say, and bonding. But it was over a 30-year period, and it was also limited, right? There was two or three channels, and Happy Days was on Sundays at whatever time. But when we look at technology, the iPhone, for a similar analogy, it took less than 8 years to hit 50% of U.S. households. And so that very rapid disruption in our family life and professional life occurred very, very quickly. And I believe before we all knew what was going on, how to adapt to it, whether it was the content, the unlimited amount of channels and information that never ended, or things like the blue light impact on our retina, or even the sitting, the sedentary behavior aspect. And then, you know, just to go on about the accessibility to content that children never had access to, including really serious things like pornography and hate and cyberbullying. So there is a bit of a comparison, but we've never seen anything like this before in human history.
Shami, recognizing then that, you know, living tech-free is pretty well impossible for most families today. I mean, it is so integrated into our lives. How and when would you recommend that young parents specifically introduce kids to technology?
Right. Yeah. Rob, I've thought about that in my own home too. And, you know, I think that's why I came up with this idea of a tech diet. And I think we want to start, you know, when I was going around the world for my first book, The Dolphin Parent, I would speak with parents from everywhere on this globe. And the first or second question was always that question, you know, when can I give my kid a phone and how much screen time is okay? And I realized I didn't have an answer. And it was always changing when I looked at the guidelines, the American or the Canadian or the Australian. And then I said, well, we need to, you know, let's find another paradigm. And that was the diet. And just like we teach children very, very early, and we do it repetitively, you know, when they're babies, we talk about healthy food and junk food and toxic food. So, you know, we can use the same concept. But to answer your question directly, I actually say, don't give your child a device, let them borrow yours. That way you are, is very clear. It is your, it's just like a car. You know, we don't recommend giving a 16-year-old a car. Let them borrow your car. You have the keys, you pay the bills, you pay the gas. You can take it back anytime. And you're there to help guide them to the healthy use of it. So that's a general guideline. I say there's some great campaigns, wait until grade 8 or no screens until teens. I think those are very reasonable because you want some runway. You don't want to give your child a device in grade 12 and then they're off and you have no, there's no runway to guide them. But at the same time, too soon, there's no evidence that there's any benefit of early tech use, but there is a lot of scientific evidence of too much tech use, including disruption in the myelin of the brain in toddlers. And so I say delay, delay, delay. Don't give your child a device. Let them borrow yours. And then work on three critical life skills before they are really using a lot of tech. These would be time management skills, emotional regulation skills, and some sense of real life social skills. So you want to see those, you know, if your nine-year-old has those, maybe, and you know, and you need to carpool, maybe they can handle a phone. But if your 15-year-old doesn't have those, you want to really work on those before you give them a lot of tech time.
Yeah, no, that sounds reasonable.
You talked about the impact on myelin, but from an addiction perspective, if we're talking about the video game addiction or maybe social media, what else is happening on a brain level? Like people talk about it or think about it, addictions as, you know, being addicted to alcohol or nicotine. What's happening on the brain level with people who are addicted?
Right. Okay, Tony. So you're now getting into like my favorite topic and the topic of my life's work, really, which is our brain and motivation and what drives our motivation and what disrupts our motivation. So the currency of addiction is a neurochemical called dopamine. You know, that's our understanding. This is the neurochemical of reward and pleasure. It is an important neurochemical. It's not all bad. The analogy I give, it's like sugar. Okay. So we need sugar to survive. And so sugar's not bad, but piles and piles of sugar, you know, without the healthy carbs and protein and fat in of itself is addictive. And same is true with dopamine. Now, what's interesting about technology is the technology industry discovered and actually had very sophisticated neuroscience and neuroscientists help in the development of tech products, whether it was the hardware or software. And we see that. And in fact, there's a company in California called Dopamine Labs. And I can't tell you how my head exploded when I saw the name of this company. As an addiction psychiatrist, the name was Dopamine Labs. And when I looked at what they do, they help other companies manipulate technology platforms to enhance the release of dopamine. Now, some of it's done, I would say, in very negative ways in areas like gambling and pornography and video gaming and social media and even the like button and all kinds of stuff. And this company also does it in positive ways. So they have some positive dopamine drives for Parkinson's patients who, you know, they're trying to get them to come back and do the exercises, the physio on their app. But I think what's really important is this idea of persuasive design, the purposeful use of dopamine manipulation to attract and hook and keep our attention, eyeballs on the screen. This is the reality of technology. It is an unfair situation because on one end of the screen is an underdeveloped brain, under construction, not fully myelinated, not fully mature yet until post 24. And on the other end of the screen is the most sophisticated neuroscience that's designed to keep them on eyeballs on. So I think that's a reality and we have to understand it. I'm not saying the tech industry wanted to ruin a generation, but they wanted to sell their products and they found a way to do it.
That's such amazing what you've just said there, because we've just seen documentaries like The Social Dilemma, which I'm sure you've seen as well. Cal Newport wrote a book called Digital Minimalism, which mm-hmm. talks about really big tech working to, you know, promote the use of their products and to promote, you know, advertising consumption. How do parents even stand a chance when there is this sort of behemoth of marketing and science sort of directed at the toddlers, you know, who we're trying to raise in this world?
Right. Yeah, that's a great, great question. It's very overwhelming. And that's why I go back to the diet metaphor, because we've been here before and we were here with sugar. You know, every parent knows how hard it is to guide your child to healthy food. There's sugar everywhere. It's embedded in all the products. It's high palatable. You know, it is a lot of work. But we understand that, you know, that is part of our role as parents, to try our best to also talk about a healthy food diet. And so I hope that using that same metaphor and in the tech solution, I lay out the tech diet. I say that the technology we consume impacts our mind and body the same way the food we consume impacts our mind and body. And there's three general categories of tech consumption. One is healthy tech, and that technology you can be less concerned about. This is technology that leads to self-care behaviors like mindfulness and meditation apps and gratitude journaling and watching your Fitbit count your steps, connection, positive social connection and bonding, community activism, and any tech that leads to creativity and learning. And that's kind of the safer tech. And then you want to be careful of the sugar, the junk tech, like junk food. So mindless scrolling through Instagram or mindless zoning out through a video game. A little bit won't kill you, just like pizza and pop, but too much is harmful. And so limit and monitor the junk tech and then avoid the toxic stuff, the highly addictive things, the gambling, the cyberbullying, the hate, you know, and all the negativity. And the comparing your life to others and that fear of missing out, those are very toxic to the developing brain, especially the teenage brain. And it lights up the same centers as pain and starvation, actually, when a young person feels left out or excluded, including online. So I put that's all in the toxic category. The ingredient there is cortisol or the stress hormone. So you have now a diet. You have the ingredient cortisol you want to avoid. You have the dopamine you want to limit, like sugar. And then the healthy stuff is serotonin and oxytocin and endorphin. And I hope that kind of paradigm helps parents and make some healthy choices.
We live in a world now where technology is evolving so rapidly. It's fully integrated into our everyday activities. And you talk about having CQ skills. Can you explain what you mean by CQ?
Right. Yeah. So CQ was a term I introduced in my first book, The Dolphin Parent. And in that book, you know, I like to use metaphors, as you can hear. This was back when there was all these parenting metaphors like helicopter and tiger and snowplow parent, but there was nothing kind of positive. So I chose the dolphin because I think dolphins are amazing. And the dolphins have CQ. So they have the five C's of the 21st century skills that we want to guide our children towards. So CQ stands for consciousness quotient. And if we do a little walk through human intelligence, the first quotient we heard was called IQ. IQ generally is what we would say left brain skills, technical skills, memory, and, you know, technical knowledge, logic, very, very important, especially when the school system started 300 plus years ago. You know, knowledge wasn't accessible. You had to go to a book or a mentor to find information. So IQ became very important, and it's how our Western school system launched. And then the internet happened and knowledge became accessible, and people didn't have to know the right answer. They had to learn how to ask the right question. And we started to hear this term EQ, emotional quotient, in general, kind of more right brain, right? So social skills, empathy. And then this false debate happened. Is it IQ, EQ, left brain, right brain? But really what I'm trying to get to and what the science shows, it's full brain, it's consciousness quotient, actually mind-body intelligence, because we have neurons in our heart and neurons in our gut as well. And when we sync up our human intelligence system, now we have the five C's. And these are communication, collaboration, critical thinking, contribution, and creativity. So those are the five C's, whether you are looking at a university system or a workplace or wherever you go, the research is very clear. These are the five key skills of the future. So I talk about in the Dolphin Parent book, and I have a program called Dolphin Kids, where we are teaching these specific skills and what's great about them is every child has access to them because these aren't genetic. These are cultivated. They're all come from our cortex, cortical brain. They can all be nurtured and developed. Every child can have creativity and contribution and communication and collaboration and critical thinking skills. So no one is left out.
I love just thinking in much more holistic and broad terms like that. If you think about even university admissions, how it's kind of mainly based on IQ, unfortunately, and not so much on all these other factors, which are probably just as important for learning and growing up in this world. So I'm glad you are talking about this in the Dolphin Kids and Parenting angle. So thank you.
Yeah, Rob, and it's interesting. I don't know if you noticed that in medical students, but like I interview medical students, and over the years, I've seen their exam shift. And last time I did it, I'm allowed to say this, but I was doing a station, and in seven, usually they have to give us technical medical knowledge, explain, you know, what would happen in a heart attack. But, the station was the applicant had to read a quote that was written like 4,000 years ago by a Greek philosopher and had to come in and sit with me and explain what that quote meant to him in 7 minutes. And that was it. And so that's the skills. You know, what I was examining this applicant for was communication and critical thinking and creativity and all of these C's. Those types of interviews and assessments, those are the game changers. Those are the ones that will determine, success in a very competitive world. And what's beautiful about them is they come from play. They come from social connection. They come from taking care of yourself. You can't be creative and stressed at the same time. It just stress comes from the lower brain. Creativity comes from the higher brain. So, if we can do a better job in caring for children and having them care and self-care for themselves, they will naturally be more successful. We don't have to push them and over-evaluate them like we're seeing. And that has led to a real mental health crisis among children.
These days, I'm sure we have parents who are listening right now who are wondering, okay, we're talking about screens, we're talking about tech. I just really need to know, you know, what are the signs I need to watch out for? You know, the signs that my child has been getting too much screen time or maybe is possibly addicted to video gaming. What would you tell parents to watch out for?
Right. Okay. Yeah. So the hallmark signs of addiction are an inability to cut down, even though limits and have been placed. So if you've tried, you know, you've had 1,000 conversations about limiting video gaming or social media and it's not working, you know, that's an important sign. Negative consequences because of the behavior. So either social health is impacted, they're losing their friends, or their academic health, you know, the grades are dropping, or their physical health, they're not, you know, don't want to go to soccer, don't want to go outside anymore, just it's all about the phone. Or so negative consequences, inability to cut down, compulsive use. So they're hiding it and kind of doing it underground. And then cravings as well. They're thinking of it when they're in the middle of Christmas dinner or, you know, seeing their grandma and they all they want to do is play. So unfortunately, a lot of parents hear that and they go, oh my God, my child's addicted. But it is very powerful. And so we don't want to wait till we see all that. When we see early signs, we want to intervene and set limits and monitoring before all of those things.
It's great you mentioned limits because we just had a guest on our podcast, Jennifer Collar, who does a lot of work with parents and talks about the importance of setting limits. Because sometimes we're afraid to set limits because of fear of the blowback we might get. And I thought it was interesting in your book how you mentioned one example of a patient whose parents had sort of said, okay, we got to do something here. And they took away the Xbox. And what they realized was they thought they were going to get massive blowback, but instead the child was like, not saying thank you, but was much more appreciative of parents imposing a limit and a boundary for their tech use. Almost like kids need that in, you know, subconsciously, perhaps they just feel like they need that limit to reduce their own stress and anxiety, it seems like.
Yeah, Rob. Yeah, no, thanks for remembering that part. And that was a true story from my practice. And I think limits are important, you know, because the child's brain hasn't fully developed its prefrontal cortex yet, which is the area of the brain that's needed for long-term planning and consequences. So just like we don't let, you know, I tell my kids, look, I'm not going to let you drive off a cliff, you know, or ruin your life because you don't like this math teacher and, you know, will work. I'm not going to also let you fry your brain by doing these things. And you can thank me later, but right now I'm setting these limits. And so, you know, the metaphor I try to give is don't be a jellyfish parent, which is, you know, very easy when you're tired and exhausted or overwhelmed. I say on Fridays, I'm a jellyfish because I've had a long work week and my kids are playing video games and eating chips for dinner and I pretend I don't notice. And don't be a shark or a tiger or helicopter or snowplow, which is like overbearing, micromanaging. I say on a Monday, I'm a shark parent or, you know, I'm stressed. I have 150 emails. I got to get everyone out the door and I'm like yelling and micromanaging. And on Wednesday, when I'm a little bit balanced, I'm in that place where I'm a dolphin. I'm firm, but flexible. There's love with limits. There's warmth and control. That's what we call authoritative parenting. And we know the science is very clear. When we have that approach, we see kids with better mental health, better creativity, better academic success, better life skills, better happiness, better health. I say it's simple, right? Don't be a jellyfish. Don't be a shark. Be in the middle. But it's not easy. Simple is not easy.
Yeah, I find it hard sometimes to set those sort of limits. Personally, like I have 4 kids too, and they're all on various stages of technology. You know, they're between the ages of 11 and 16. And so I find I'm most sort of perturbed by their tech use when I'm perturbed by my own tech use. And sometimes that just seems to flow out to them. And I know as parents, and you mentioned this too in your book, you know, we have to watch out ourselves, what we are modeling and what we are doing with technology, because it's no sense trying to tell our kids to do something that we can't even do.
Yeah, absolutely. And that persuasive design, that dopamine driven feedback loops, you know, we're all vulnerable. Children are more because they're more sensitive. The teenage brain in particular is driven to get dopamine for risk taking and social bonding, but we're all vulnerable to all those habits and addictions and overuse and unhealthy patterns in tech.
Let's say I'm recognizing the signs and I realize that my child does have a video gaming addiction. Do you ever recommend like intervening and removing it or stopping cold turkey? Like, what would you say about that?
Yeah, I think it depends on the situation and the age of the child. I think if the child is young and it's early, then sometimes cold turkey is really good because if they're safe, and the environment is safe and they're not going to run away from home or destroy the house. And I've seen teenagers run away from home, go missing for 3 days when the parents have shut the Wi-Fi off. I've seen boys be physically aggressive and assault their parents when the Xboxes have been taken away. So you do have to be careful with the older age group. And maybe cold turkey isn't the best. Maybe a slow weaning off, kind of like a detox, like we would do in other addictions. But for younger kids, if the home is safe and there's other toys and, you know, good diet and you can manage it, then sometimes that's the easiest. It just, you know, replace it with some fun wooden toys and some friends or play dates if you can, or some outdoor, because their brain is, and people are so scared. They're like, but my son doesn't love anything. He only loves his video game. And I'm like, you know what? Your son is a human. The human brain is hardwired to love nature, to love play, to love outdoor activity, to love fitness, to love social bonding. There is no way your child, just get the stuff out of the way, keep them safe, and let the brain take over. Let this beautiful, this DNA that has evolved, the human being, we are driven and we are intrinsically motivated to play, socially bond, and to have these activities. So younger kids, I think for sure. Older kids, you want to be very careful. Sometimes you might want professional help, family doctors and pediatricians or counselors or therapists, the school, other family. I think using intergenerational cousins and aunts and uncles, like intermediaries, is helpful. But you definitely want to think of your kid and the plan. I've seen suicide attempts from parents shutting off tech too abruptly. So you really just want to be mindful of consequences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks for talking to us about that, because it does come up a lot. I mean, sometimes I hear parents say, oh, I've taken away everything. And even, especially in COVID, you know, for many teenagers, you know, having some access to social media has been a lifeline as mm-hmm. well. And it is often a source of support too. So it is true that we should take all these on a case-by-case basis, right?
Yeah. I mean, and I have real kids, and my sons love their gaming. You know, they're 13 and 15, and they are allowed. We've talked about the tech diet. They told me Fortnite is like nachos. They're like, Mom, it's kind of junky, but it's so fun, and we laugh and joke with our friends. So Fortnite is like nachos. They get nachos on Friday night. You know, they love sports games. So they're allowed to play FIFA and NBA and hockey with their friends and cousins only, no strangers. And sports games are kind of, you know, and they get 2 hours on the weekends, and they can decide within those limits. And, you know, my daughter loves her drawing apps and she does all kinds of stuff. So, you know, we use the metaphor and we talk about it and we're like, that's the toxic stuff. We're going to avoid that. You know, the first person shooter game, sitting alone in the basement and, you know, you come out completely zoned out and irritated. So many parents are like, my son is like, he's not happy after he plays those. That's really important feedback, you know, whereas, you know, if your child plays a game and comes out laughing and joking because they had a good time with your friends, that's a good thing, you know. So we want to just, I'm hoping this will help make positive choices. It's not, you know, it's not so black and white, and we need to have a deeper understanding.
Can we shift gears for a minute to social media and teenagers? Because mm-hmm. we just alluded to it a little bit there. But, you know, you talked about how relationships just cause oxytocin to flow, you know, face-to-face relationships especially. And a lot of teenagers would say, yeah, I'm actually really connected to my friends. I have like 200 people on Facebook or on Instagram that I follow or on Snapchat. I'm totally connected. But is that real connection? Does that cause the same oxytocin to flow? Does that have the same positive impacts as, say, just hanging out with your friends face-to-face in real life?
Yeah, short answer is no. Okay. And thanks for asking. It's such an important question. So really, really important. What drives human health, happiness, and motivation is social bonding, not socializing. And there's a big difference, and definitely not social status. Okay. So when we look at all the friends, there's the social status component, like, oh, I have all these likes, that's social status. That actually isn't healthy. We actually know that's linked to cortisol, and trying to maintain that status is very, very stressful for teenagers. I've had teenagers who like spend 3 hours a day liking and commenting on all their friends because they feel obligated because they do it to them, and they're sleep deprived and they can't do their homework because the human brain actually, you know, studies show we can manage about 80 relationships. You know, when we think of our tribe, when we get into the hundreds and trying to manage it, it becomes stressful for us. So we want to social bond, meaningful connection, you know, deep relationships. And if you can do that on tech, like, you know, FaceTiming a grandparent or a friend through COVID and being there for each other and sharing a laugh and being vulnerable, those are all aspects of bonding, you know, music and laughter and all of that. But social media, you know, where you're just superficially socializing is definitely not linked to health and is linked to high stress levels. And there is some gender issues there. Of course, gender is not binary, but we do know the research shows that social media is negative aspects of anxiety, depression, and body image disturbance. We tend to see more in girls than women in general.
You mentioned that there's information to suggest that big tech companies have a way of knowing when teenagers are showing signs of feeling vulnerable or, you know, maybe more prone to respond to attention-getting maneuvers, can I say? Mm-hmm. Can you explain more about that?
Yeah. So it's interesting because the brain changes from childhood to in between adulthood, and it kind of corresponds a bit with puberty, although the puberty ends neurologically around 24. And so the teenage brain or the adolescent brain or the young brain is driven by dopamine, this pleasure reward neurochemical, to do three things. And these were really important in human evolution. These three things were risk-taking and peer admiration and novelty seeking. Okay. So think back when we were hunter gatherers, we pretty much died in our 20s or 30s. And the teenager was driven to go leave their tribe, go out, explore the savannah, find other tribes, procreate, seek novelty, bond with other people and be okay with risks. And that's how human evolution happened. And we moved all across the planet. But that neurobiology is still there in young brains. And I saw, particularly during COVID, they're doing these three things before it would be online, but it would also be a horror movie, right? Or go on a roller coaster. So it's risk-taking, novelty-seeking, and I'm going to impress the girl or the friends and go down the roller coaster or stay out a bit late or ride my bike without a helmet or do whatever teenagers might do. But now they're doing it online mostly. And we're seeing really, really serious risk-taking and behaviors. And once you see something, you can't unsee it. Once you post something, it's there. Real consequences for young people, whether it's, you know, their personal reputation or their scholarships or, you know, losing things that they've worked hard for, you know, with just silly teenage mistakes. And I see it all the time. And I think, you know, we don't realize that that's just the brain. And, you know, my son did something recently really dumb online. And I'm like, I wrote the book. How could you do that? And then I remembered and I said, well, you know what? And I actually told my kid, my son, I'm like, well, you know, I get it. When I was your age, I actually shoplifted. I went to a store and stole some stuff and I didn't tell anyone. And I don't know why I did it. You know, my parents told me never to do it. I have no idea, but I did it. And you know what? I get it. It just happens. So we want to understand that that these young people need our support. And we don't want to judge them and label them. We need to be there to guide them through these difficult challenges.
Thank you, Shimi, for all this information that you've given to us, starting right from toddlers and how we need to think about introducing technology to teenagers and some of the risks of social media, but also some of the benefits of it and how technology has really benefited us in this current pandemic and in a virtual world with online schooling, et cetera. So where do we go from here? I mean, sometimes I think we like to think of a simpler time long, long ago, you know, and everything was great. Of course, you know, there were problems back then as well. But I would say that right now, it's pretty hard to put the tech genie back in the bottle. It's out. It's here to stay. It's not, you know, going back to those days. So you have a method for parents to move them in a positive direction. And maybe in a nutshell, could you give us sort of your steps of how to implement change for tech use in our kids?
Sure. Yeah. So I say, parents, start with yourself, you know, and let's get ourselves a bit balanced. Let's get out of our freeze, fight or flight response. Freeze makes us controlling, sharky helicopter parents, and flight makes us distracted, overwhelmed jellyfish parents, and fight makes us both. And once we're centered, we're more likely to be that dolphin, that calm, collaborative, firm, yet flexible, authoritative style of parenting. And then within that, maybe start with your own tech diet. You can do something fun. In the show notes, there's going to be a blank plate and an infographic of what a tech diet looks like. So you could say, hey, I listened to this podcast and I filled it out. And I did that with my kids. And they were very happy to point out my junk tech and my toxic tech. They're like, Mom, you watch the news way too much. And then, you know, we see how you get all stressed in the pandemic. And, you know, you really should avoid that show or whatever. They were very happy to be involved. And then, you know, you can role model change, have some smart goals like bite size, like I'm going to consume more healthy tech. You know, I meditate. And so now I show my kids, I'm going to use my phone to meditate. Here's the steps I counted. I have a genetic disorder. I lack collagen. And so I have chronic pain. So I got them involved in showing them how I'm using tech to empower my health, how I'm trying to limit my junk, avoid the toxic, and then offer it to them to do the same thing. You can do it in a fun way, in a family challenge. You know, everyone's going to clean up their tech diets a little bit. But I do say, and then some really practical things, you know, if you are using tech, try to use blue light glasses, especially close to night, try to stand up. My sons, when they play video games, they have to stand, because, you know, that crouched posture is very stressful. Our nervous system is, why are you crouched over in a cave, not looking at anyone? You know, is there a predator? Is there a hurricane? And just that crouched over for hours is very, very stressful. So, you know, I work with them and they're like, well, I don't want to stand. I'm like, well, then I'm trying to help you play video games. So stand, wear your blue light glasses, move around. So all these add-ons that we can have. And then in the show notes, there'll be some house rules and some fridge notes, just some common sense stuff that I'm hoping will help people.
I love the resources you're making available to all of us. Where can we find out more about you and all you have to offer?
Sure. Yeah. So my website is drshimikang.com. So, you know, it's got links to my books and I have a YouTube channel, which is Healthy Tech. I explain the brain and brain science and all of what we just talked about and coping skills and so much more. And it's called Mental Wealth with Dr. Shimi Kang. So you can find me on YouTube and social media, of course. And, you know, I just so grateful for programs like this to really spread the message. You know, people need tools and science in practical ways, directly, you know, direct access to them.
That's awesome. Thank you. And that's your name, Dr. Shimmy Kang, S-H-I-M-I, capital K-A-N-G.
Yeah. And the dolphin, if you look up dolphin parent, you'll find me.
Well, thank you for all you do, for all the, you know, world of information that you bring. And your book is amazing. It is probably one of the best books about technology and kids and parenting that I've read. So certainly fantastic. Thank you for the message and for spreading it. And I love having you on the show today. Thank you.
Rob, I love the way Dr. Kang talks about this approach to technology for parents as being analogous to what we do as parents to help our kids learn how to eat well, that we want them to enjoy their food, to focus on healthy food, to also enjoy some junk food here and there, but you know, not to allow our kids to start eating so much junk food that it overtakes their diet and leads to negative health consequences. You know, I think this perspective helps us to just focus on, you know, keeping it overall positive and allowing ourselves, allowing our families to function coherently and collaboratively with great communication and not to get stuck to our screens.
Yeah, no, absolutely. We've talked before on this show about digital junk food and digital vegetables. And I think this theme came through again today. I mean, food is great. We need it. It's life-sustaining, but not all food is good all the time. And in fact, there's even some toxic things out there that we need to avoid altogether. And so I think Dr. Kang really, you know, brought that home for us today. Her book, The Tech Solution, goes into much more detail about it. So definitely recommend it, plus the resources that you can find on our show notes, which are pretty easy to get to. You just go to our podcast website, smartfamilypodcast.com. You click on the picture that's associated with this episode or any episode for that matter, and the show notes for that episode will come up with further resources and links that will include all the ones that Dr. Kang mentioned today.
And if you've enjoyed this episode or some of our prior episodes, we would love for you to go to Apple Podcasts and just leave us a rating. It will help lift the profile of this podcast so that it reaches more parents. And if you would be so kind as to do that, we would so appreciate it. Also, if there's any parenting topics or challenges you are facing, issues that we haven't covered yet on our podcast in the area of parenting or in the area of marriage, please reach out to us. You can easily find us under the name Smart Family Podcast on Instagram and on Facebook, or you can drop us a note through our website. Sorry. And we would love to hear from you. We're all ears for your suggestions.
Yeah. So thanks for listening today to the Smart Family Podcast. We really hope that this show helps elevate your parenting to the next level. And in fact, to the point where it allows you to love being home with all members of your family. Thanks for listening today. Till next time.